This is Basketball Central on Sportsnet 650 with Marcus Fitzgerald.
Yeah. Turn me up a little bit. Guess what's been on my mind? That's that Northeast Groove sample right there.
Tuesday night, Basketball Central. Marcus Fitzgerald with you on Sportsnet 650, your home of the Vancouver Canucks. And yes, this is the only basketball show on terrestrial radio in Vancouver. As always, we're happy to have you with us as we tape this show on a Tuesday afternoon from home in Port Coquitlam. Hottest day of the year, 28 degrees. It's about 26 as I tape this afternoon. So it is a little warm, but it's great to have you with us as always. You can find us a number of different ways. 650 if you're in your car, the Radio Player Canada app, the Sportsnet app, HD Radio 96.9 HD3. You can also tell your smart speaker, play Sportsnet 650. You can also find me on Twitter, at Marcus Fitzy. Coming up, we're going to have Steve DeWall, the Blazers Edge, SB Nation, join us. Talk a little bit about Portland. Again, we're taping this Tuesday afternoon. This is ahead of a couple of crucial Game 5s. You've got Blazers and Nuggets tonight, series tied at 2. And you've also got the Lakers and the Suns, Game 5 from Phoenix. No Anthony Davis this evening. We will get into the Lakers and their scenario a little later on in the show, but we will talk to Steve DeWald, the Blazers Edge, about Portland, but we'll also whip around the NBA playoffs because things are starting to take shape in terms of first-round matchups. Second-round series are starting to come into play. It's been fun the last few days, and we're glad you're joining us right here to talk about that tonight. We are going to start, though, with what happened last night around the NBA. The big story, of course, the Eastern Conference, at least one half of the Eastern Conference bracket, because last night you've got Joel Embiid going down with what's being described as knee soreness. As we're taping this, we don't have an official word yet on the status of Embiid for Game 5 back in Philly. Sixers lead this series 3-1. They are the one seed here in the conference. They should be okay here to close things out, you would think. But really, with Embiid, given his injury history, you have to start worrying about the future for this Sixers team. There's a lot of expectations in Philadelphia. Ben Simmons has had a great year, Defensive Player of the Year candidate. First year with Doc Rivers, manning the ship, running the show. And, you know, now the Sixers could be headed towards the same issues with Embiid that they had with Ben Simmons last year. Ben Simmons got hurt in the bubble. They got swept aside by the Celtics very quickly. Maybe we could see the same old movie in Philadelphia here over the next few days, but that depends, of course, on the health of Embiid as he took kind of an awkward fall last night in that loss to Washington in Game 4. So we'll see what happens in Game 5. Staying, though, with that side of the bracket in the Eastern Conference, the big quote of the day, Clint Capella of the Atlanta Hawks, saying they will put the Knicks on vacation tomorrow night. And they just might, because it's been unearthed today that home teams in the playoffs this year, and this is according to Zach Cram with The Ringer, he wrote this today, home teams in the playoffs this year, 16-16 overall. The average margin of victory by home teams in the playoffs, just 0.9 points per game. And you know what the average was in the bubble? It was 1 when home court didn't exist. And that's with fans coming back. Again, taping this on a Tuesday afternoon, ahead of tonight's Game 5 between the Suns and the Lakers. Your mind is trained to think that the Lakers will have an added wrinkle to deal with in the Suns' home crowd, which apparently is adding another 5,000 people. There should be 16,000 in there. But when you peruse over those numbers, and LeBron James on the other side, suddenly it doesn't seem so daunting, does it? What a strange wrinkle. And that brings us back to Clint Capella and the Hawks. Here's what he said a little earlier today when talking about his role in this series and the way his team matches up with the New York Knicks, with Atlanta up 3-1 in this set.
And we show them as soon as they came back here that we can push guys around too. We can talk it as well. So what you going to do about it? And we can get a win with it. So what you going to do about it? Oh, Game 4, you're coming back again. Well, it's going to happen again. We win the game. We talk it and we push around. So what are you going to do about it? So that's what happened. We can do it too. We can be physical, but we can win games as well. And now we're coming to your home to win this game again. They send you on vacation.
See, I love that right there. That's what sports needs more of. That's what professional basketball needs more of. That's what we all need more of in that world where nothing has to be all that serious. That's great that Clint Capella stepped up and said that. We're going to go into the Garden, Madison Square Garden, on Wednesday night. That raucous crowd that we saw in games 1 and 2 in this series. And we're going to send them home. The Atlanta Hawks, The Atlanta Hawks are suddenly the villains here. That's amazing. Trae Young was the ultimate villain the first couple of games in New York. He's a confident guy. And you know what? We haven't talked about Trae Young enough on this show over the last few weeks, which you can double back and check out, by the way. You can find us online, sportsnet.ca/650, the Basketball Central tab. You can also check us out on the Sportsnet app. Enough hasn't been paid. Enough attention hasn't been paid to Trae Young. He's been amazing in this series. 28 points a game, 10 assists per game, and that assist number might even be more impressive for Trae when you consider his career average is about 8.3. So he's up that in the playoffs when he knows that he's the focal point for a Knicks defense that was fifth best in the entire NBA. And you know what? I have to apologize here. I got swept up in the Knicks hype. I mean, the Hawks and Trae Young have answered every question so far in this series. New York was known for playing rugged defense all year. It looked like the 90s again. Again, like I said, they were top five, and for whatever reason, they just haven't been able to slow down Trae in this series. When everyone knows, once again, he's the focal point. Defenses gravitate towards him, make other guys beat you. Trae is that guy, and he's averaging 28 and 10 assists in the series, higher than his career averages. And he's embraced being the villain at Madison Square Garden, which is great to see, because now a whole new generation who didn't remember Reggie Miller can experience this. And the parallels work too, because the Hawks may not be a perennial title contender, but Trae can play into that narrative. It can get blown out of proportion, of course, because it's New York and they'll probably make documentaries about it, but it's great for the league. It's great for the NBA. Maybe the Hawks can go into the Garden and close things out on the road. I don't think they do. I think I see this series going at least one more game. I said the Knicks in six. I was wrong about that. I totally misread Trae Young. I didn't think he'd be ready for the moment. He clearly is part of this young band of young stars that have really shown out here in the playoffs. Trae's been great. And you know what the Knicks don't have? A guy like Trae Young. Julius Randle had a wonderful season. He is the most improved player. But obviously, when you compare the two, Julius Randle hasn't answered the challenge the same way that Trae Young has in terms of being the focal point on a playoff team for the first time. Normally, in situations like this, guys have to go through it. They have to take their lumps. I think that's what Randle's going through right now. Atlanta's done some good things to him defensively. And I think with Julius Randle, the mistake he makes, he tries to get himself going by hitting sidestep 25-footers. Which he did hit in the regular season, and he looked very good against the Hawks in the regular season, but he's got to find a way to get going. And I think the way he does that, you got to put your head down. You got to start going downhill a little bit. You got to be aggressive. I used to hate that in high school when coaches would say, Marcus, stop shooting the jump shot, go to the basket. No, I want to keep shooting. But that's what Julius Randle has to do. He's got to put his head down. He's got to go to the basket, get himself going to give the Knicks a chance. Now, they will have the crowd behind them in Game 5 of the Garden on Wednesday night. You know they will. But in order for the Knicks to actually win the ball game, they're going to need Julius Randle to put up numbers in a similar way that he did against the Hawks in the regular season. Although, you could totally see Trae Young closing this out. And wouldn't it be funny if Trae Young won a playoff series and maybe DeAndre Ayton wins a playoff series before Luka Doncic? Think about that for a minute. Joining me right now on Basketball Central, Sportsnet 650 here in Vancouver, making his first appearance on the show. You can catch him SB Nation Blazers Edge. Steve DeWaldy joins me now. Steve, thanks so much for doing this. How are you on this Tuesday?
You know, things are looking up in Portland after a rough couple games. Game four really kind of turned around for Portland, so I have no complaints here.
Well, for sure. And we'll get to the Blazers in just a sec, because as we're taping this on a Tuesday afternoon, this is ahead of game five, pretty pivotal. We'll get into some big picture Blazer stuff in a little bit, but I did start the show, Steve, talking about, you know, a couple series in the Eastern Conference. Clint Capella said just today, a couple hours ago, you might have seen this, that the Hawks are going to come out and put the Knicks on vacation at the Garden on Wednesday. I bought into the Knicks hype, Steve, a little too much going into this series, and I do feel a little bit silly at the moment. I mean, what stood out to you about Trae Young and this Hawks team? Are you surprised it's transpired this way, or did you see the Hawks dictating the pace of the series?
You know, I don't think it's silly at all to kind of bank on the Knicks going into the playoffs looking like a team that could get out of the first round. I think so many of us are programmed to go, hey, defense is going to translate into the postseason. And so, you know, look no further than the Knicks, especially facing kind of a polar opposite team in the Hawks. Needless to say, I am a little surprised. I am surprised how well Trae Young has played in the postseason. Typically, whistles tend to kind of disappear and play tightens up. And Trae Young doesn't strike me as a player, at least prior to the series, as a guy who's set up to thrive in those situations. So it is surprising to see how well the Hawks and how well they have outplayed the Knicks. And really, it's been kind of a disappointment for Julius Randle, because I mean, this whole season was really building up to he has arrived and he's become, you know, a marquee face in one of the NBA's biggest markets. And I hope this season, this series isn't a referendum on his entire series, on his entire season, but this series has kind of been a rough look for him to start things off.
Well, that's where it gets tricky, Steve. And that was actually my next question. I mean, you've got Trae Young, who's answered every question in this series so far. And then there's Julius Randle, who, like Trae Young, is in his first postseason as the lead guy. I mean, do you think it's as simple as some guys being able to figure out right away and others just need time? I mean, does Julius Randle need more time to figure it out, or does he simply need another star to ride with? Is he one of those guys?
Yeah, I think with Trae, he is setting the table for the entire offense. And yes, we've seen Julius Randle do that at times for the Knicks. I mean, really for large chunks of the season, but it's different when you have that backcourt player that is setting the table. And I think RJ Barrett can get there. I think he's made big strides this year, but this is the first taste of the postseason for him. He's, you know, he's taken a huge step from that first season to now. And I think he could be the guy that develops there, or the Knicks have the flexibility this offseason to go, hey, this didn't work in this series. We have the flexibility to go and get someone who really complements this entire roster and can play off Julius Randle, because I think that really kind of has been one of the things that has stood out. Also, they just kind of need a bucket getter, and that's something that the Hawks have plenty of that the Knicks really don't have.
Why do you think, I mean, because Trae's averaging 28 a game in this series, but he's also averaging 10 assists a game, which is higher than his career average. And the Knicks with Tibbs have had a top five defense all season. Why do you think, you know, the Knicks just haven't been able to get to Trae when you would just think going in, okay, they center the whole defense around Trae and everything should be good. They haven't been able to do that. Have you been able to figure out why?
I think anytime I have the benefit of watching Damian Lillard night in and night out, and Steph Curry has very similar billing as well, where you see the gravity of these players. Even when, you know, defenses are focused on them, it opens up so much. I mean, we've watched Draymond Green really thrive off of the gravity that Steph Curry and Klay Thompson create. And I think we're seeing a little bit of it with that with Trae, as far as when the defense tries to swallow him up, he has done a really good job of getting that ball out on time and not getting himself into too much trouble. And he's done a really good job. And it is impressive for a player in his first postseason to really have a feel like that for when the pressure's coming, when to avoid it, and when to get the ball out to where you're still creating an open lane and not bailing on pressure too soon.
Well, I also think too with Trae, Steve, I mean, we go back to that draft and Ayton goes one. I mean, Luka Doncic was sitting there, and then you have the trade with the Hawks and the Mavs. And do you think the Hawks knew something that we didn't with Trae? Because the way he's played this series, not just the way he's played, Steve, but also the fact that he's become like the new Reggie Miller at Madison Square Garden, which not just anybody can do. Do you think the Hawks may have known something a couple of years ago that maybe just we didn't?
I think it's tough to, it's always going to be tough with Luka in front of him. But as far as what the Hawks and the Mavericks have done, they look like they've made the right choice as far as avoiding Marvin Bagley or DeAndre Ayton. I think the Kings especially have a lot more questions that to answer than the Hawks do.
Yeah.
But I think Trae and Luka are the perfect players for this era of the NBA. I mean, I think both teams were smart to target them. And I think the Hawks from the outset in this new iteration of this team, which granted there has been a coaching change, but they've always aimed to kind of be the Warriors East. And I think Trae Young is the perfect piece to do that. Now, granted, if Luka Doncic continues his career arc that he's on right now, that's always going to be a big what if question that I don't even know if Trae Young, even at his current projection, is going to be able to live up to.
Steve DeWall joining us on Basketball Central Sportsnet 650 here in Vancouver. Steve, we'll go over to the Sixers and the Wizards. A pretty weird series so far. Started the show talking about Russ. He had a triple-double last night, but I have to admit, it wasn't until today I looked at the numbers and I realized he shot 3 for 19. I mean, he can still affect the game in a myriad of ways. Joel Embiid might play in game 5. He might not. But we can safely say that the Sixers will eventually close this out. Yes, they shouldn't have to freak out just yet, I would assume.
Yeah, I think not to jump too far ahead, but I feel like the Sixers are in a much different situation than what we might see with the Lakers as far as their big man injury problems. As far as Joel Embiid goes, he did play a little while after taking that second knock on his knee. So I would assume he is going to be back in some form, if not this series, if the Sixers don't close him out in the next game, if he doesn't play. But I certainly he's going to be back in the next round, and you would assume it's going to be close to full strength. That said, Russell Westbrook is one of the most fascinating players, I think, of this entire generation of all these stars in this new kind of wave of the NBA. As far as statistically, it's eye-popping. Like you said, his stats sneak up on you, but it also, I don't think, really reflects the impact that he's making on the game. Like just a couple years ago in the Blazers series against the Thunder, the Blazers' best defense was hoping that Russell Westbrook felt the need to take a bunch of shots and get the ball out of Paul George at that time, out of his hands. So, and really, I think most teams are following that now, as far as you'd much rather have Russell Westbrook attacking your defense than Bradley Beal when Bradley Beal is firing on all cylinders.
One more on this series, Steve, and then we'll get to the Blazers. With Embiid maybe missing some time, and again, we don't know because of Embiid's injury history, this has to mean Ben Simmons will be the lead guy. He's being hack-a-shacked right now. He's 5-for-20 from the line in this series. There are lots of Simmons haters out there. I'm a Ben Simmons stan. I'm just curious where you are on Ben Simmons, because even Doc Rivers had to come out and say that, hey, don't rip this guy for not dropping 30 every night, even though if he's a lead dog, you kind of hope that he could do that once in a while.
I'm also a big Ben Simmons guy. I had the privilege of following the Sixers beat for the USA Today Sports Media Group. And one of the most enjoyable parts of that was watching Ben Simmons kind of figure out what his role was going to be in the NBA and really thrive at what he was good at. And that's the defensive end. And really, of all the guys with a lot of length that have lined up across Damian Lillard, I'd say Ben Simmons arguably has done it the best. And yes, he has some flaws on the offensive end, but in this series, if he can shut down Bradley Beal or take away one of the Wizards' two options, I think that's more than enough to get them out of this series and wait until Joel Embiid gets back. And really, Tobias Harris has had a great season, has really answered some questions on both ends of the floor that may have been plaguing him as his career has developed. And I think those two guys are perfect to play off of each other. They both can be dangerous in the pick and roll as ball handlers and as role men. So I'm excited to see what Ben Simmons can kind of do when the floor kind of opens up with Joel Embiid off of it.
Well, we wait and find out what Ben Simmons can do if Embiid does miss some time here. But we know who the man is in Portland. We know who the man is in Denver, Steve, as we kind of move ahead to this series. Again, game five is tonight. We're taping this on a Tuesday afternoon. It wasn't that long ago, Steve, where the Blazers appeared to be going nowhere. I mean, Dame was frustrated. I had Sean Hyken on this show, and he mentioned some uncertainty about ownership. Terry Stotts could be on the way out. I mean, let's say the Blazers, Steve, find a way to take down the Nuggets for the second time in the last three postseasons. Do you think that would be enough for Blazers ownership to declare things a success? And would that buy some more time for both Neil Olshey and Terry Stotts, for that matter?
I think Stotts is the one in question as far as how much time that would actually buy him. And I think really, if they do get past the Nuggets, I think a lot will depend on, one, who the opponent is in the second round. I think there's drastically different expectations if it's the Suns or if it's the Lakers, mm-hmm. with Anthony Davis and LeBron James at full strength. I think the main key is obviously getting out of this first round. I think it would be disastrous for Portland not to advance here. And that's not to take away from how good Nikola Jokic is, but you just can't lose to a team that's missing its second best option when you have Damian Lillard in his prime. So once you get to that second round, if they get there, as long as they look like they belong there, I think that is enough to save Neil Olshey. I don't think Neil Olshey's, I think he at least gets one more year and potentially see what you do with some of the assets you have as far as Norman Powell and CJ McCollum. But Terry Stotts, I think, really has to look competent, not get outcoached in that next round, and really make that team look like they belong there. And hopefully, if it is the Suns, maybe they're in contention to push it to a seven-game series where they're looking at knocking on the door of getting back to the Western Conference Finals.
Well, I like how you mentioned both CJ and Norm, because they were literally my next two questions. I mean, Dame's averaged 31 a game in this series, Steve. He's also had some big numbers in losses as well. We know he's as loyal as they come in the NBA. I'm sure he wants to stay in Portland, even if they do fall short. But aside from continuing to pay his very large contract through 24-25, I mean, is there anything at all the Blazers can do to make his stay in Portland more enjoyable? Would that mean putting CJ out there on the table in the offseason?
I think to understand what CJ's future is, I think you have to understand what Norman Powell has brought to this team. And that's he is a player that is a true two-way threat that the Blazers have paid a bunch of money in the past to try to find that player. They've matched a huge contract for Allen Crabbe. They put a bunch of money on the table for Evan Turner, and now they finally have that player. And what Norm can do is, I think he's playing admirably at the small forward position, but really it is a mouthwatering proposition to see what he could do at the shooting guard position next to Damian Lillard and potentially put CJ on the table to try to get a more defensive oriented 3-and-D small forward. But I don't think Portland's ever really shown the true appetite to put CJ on the table. And I think if we rewind a few weeks when Portland's in that losing streak, I think even though he denied having involvement with the article from Chris Haynes from Yahoo Sports, I think it was very telling that that article was the first time that we really felt someone from Damian Lillard's camp was kind of saying a drastic change needs to happen if this team is going to flame out or is not going to rise to the level of a true contender. And I think that's very important, no matter how this offseason plays or this postseason plays out. I think that going forward into this offseason, I think we're going to revisit that article, no matter where this team finishes, and see what kind of moves and what that sets the tone for, you know, when, you know, free agency opens up, when trades open up, and see what this team can do.
Steve, thank you so much for doing this. Really appreciate the time, and let's do it again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Steve DeWalt from Blazers Edge SB Nation. Good stuff as always, talking Blazers and talking a little bit about the Eastern Conference. When we come back, we'll get into more of what the Sixers have in front of them, as Joel Embiid could miss some time here. You never know with Embiid when it comes to injuries. Also talking Lakers and little Clippers in the second segment as well. That's all on the way. This is Basketball Central. You've got it on the home of the Canucks. This is Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver.
Basketball Central continues on Sportsnet 650 with your host, Marcus Fitzgerald.
Welcome back, Basketball Central, Sportsnet 650, your home of the Vancouver Canucks. Marcus Fitzgerald with you on a Tuesday night, taping this from home in Port Coquitlam. Hottest day of the year, 28 degrees the high today. It's going to cool off over the next few days, but kind of feels like summer on a Tuesday, and that's not necessarily the worst thing in the world. Lots to get into on this show, of course, talking playoffs, the second round matchups starting to come into view just a little bit. My thanks, of course, as well from the previous segment. Steve DeWall joining us from Blazers Edge, SB Nation. You can catch it on online, by the way, if you miss it, sportsnet.ca/650. You can also check us day after on the Sportsnet app. That's the best way to get us on the go on all your mobile devices. There's plenty of ways to find us as well. If you're in the car right now, you already know, find us 650 in your car. You can also check us out, the Radio Player Canada app, Sportsnet app, HD Radio, 96.9 HD3. You can also tell your smart speaker, play Sportsnet 650. You can find me on Twitter, at Marcus Fitzy. DMs are open in case you ever want to chat. They're there. You don't necessarily have to. I'm not enforcing you to, but if you want to, they're there. We can chat. In that first segment, we talked a little bit about the Knicks and the Hawks, taking a look at that side of the bracket in the Eastern Conference, because again, you know the house rules if you listen to the show. Tape on a Tuesday afternoon. I know it's not the most ideal scenario because we're taping ahead of two very pivotal Game 5s tonight in the Western Conference. You've got Denver, you've got Portland tied at two, and of course, you've got the Lakers without Anthony Davis tonight going into a Game 5 situation tied at two against the Phoenix Suns, and a Phoenix Suns team that it would seem has a healthy Chris Paul back in the fold against a team that's going to have a 16,000-person crowd. at Phoenix, at Phoenix Suns Arena, which is apparently what they call it now. There's no corporate name attached to the building. Phoenix Suns Arena tonight, 16,000 people. Chris Paul can move his arm again. Maybe the defending champs are in a bit of trouble. And we'll get to that in just a second. But I meant to get into Sixers and Wizards in the last segment, kind of got away from that, so we'll get to it now. Last night was weird. It was weird in Washington. Another bizarre performance from Russell Westbrook last night. A triple-double despite shooting 3 of 19 from the floor. How often do you see that ever in the NBA? You know what? I'll be honest. I saw that Russ had the triple-double last night, and it wasn't until today I realized he shot 3 of 19 from the field. 3 for 19. And it was something like, you know, 19 points, 21 assists, 14 rebounds. Russ has had games like that for the Wizards this season where the numbers don't make any sense at all. And I'm wondering if there's any other guy in the league who can do that. Because if you watched the game last night, and I did for stretches, and I realized that Russ was, you know, having trouble shooting the ball. I didn't know he went 3 for 19 again till this morning. Nevertheless, if you saw the game and you saw Russ out there, there's no way that Washington wins that game without him. That's the crazy thing. Maybe this is the ultimate Russell Westbrook. Maybe this is what we want from a guy like Russ, who has been very polarizing, who, you know, opens up himself to a lot of criticism with the way that he plays. You can debate whether or not he deserved that MVP a few years ago. He is the NBA's all-time leader in triple-doubles. He's also, in a way, rendered that accomplishment moot because he does it so many damn times. But what a weird night. What a weird night. 3 for 19, a triple-double. But, you know, give the Wizards credit. Rui Hachimura also hit some big shots. Daniel Gafford makes an impact in the starting lineup, although Scott Brooks probably waited until way too late to put him in there. But really the focus is on the Sixers because Philly should win this series up 3-1, but they've hit some bumps in the road. Joel Embiid has knee soreness now after getting a tweak last night. Bit of an awkward fall. Looked like it might have even been his back. Maybe the Sixers are being coy with this on the injury report. But the Sixers weren't able to close the game after that. And then according to reports today, the Sixers team plane broke down as they were trying to leave Washington. So they had to bus back to Philly and didn't get home until 6 o'clock this morning. And it's easy to say, well, these guys are pro athletes. They'll be fine. They make a lot of money. They can stand one bus ride. I've experienced that in junior hockey, playing at 7 p.m. in Prince George or Trail, and then not getting home to Chilliwack till about 5:30 in the morning. It's not ideal. It's not fun. I'm sure the Sixers had a really nice bus, but they would have preferred their plane. So now they get back to Philly. They're cranky. They're tired. They're probably sleeping one off today. And there's some questions about Joel Embiid. Again, like, look, the Sixers are the one seed in the East, and they will have the benefit of watching the Bucks and the Nets, because the Nets will get there, beat the hell out of each other on the other side of the bracket. But this is the ugly side of the process right here. Simmons got hurt in the bubble last year, and they were pushed aside in 4 straight by the Celtics. Don't forget that, because the Sixers have always been a little top-heavy. The Sixers can clearly close out the Wizards in this round without Embiid, and maybe they can deal with the Hawks or the Knicks if they come back without Embiid as well. But Embiid has been dominant in this first-round series. He won't win regular season MVP, but he's reminding people why. He's the second guy in line behind Nikola Jokic. Crazy thing is, though, if Embiid misses a lot of time, the landscape looks a lot different in the East. And because it's a guy like Embiid, you always have to be nervous, because this is what you get with big guys. I mean, we're going through this right now with Anthony Davis, who kind of tweaked his knee a little bit in Game 3 in the series against Phoenix. And then Game 4, maybe because he was compensating for the knee, now he hurts his groin. And he didn't look overly aggressive in Game 4 either, even in the first half of that game before he got hurt. So that makes you wonder if he was playing hurt to begin with, and now it's just one of those compensation injuries. Because Davis was really good in Games 2 and 3, scored 34 each in both of those games, and he looked kind of tentative in Game 4. So that makes you think he was, you know, really taking it cautiously. And now he's in a situation where the groin injury pops up, and it's because he was compensating. But this is what we get with big men, with lower body injuries. You always worry about that in the NBA. The league is littered with guys who could have had great careers, and those leg injuries just sideline them. It's happened before. Greg Oden comes to mind, right? You know, we've seen this before with big guys. Bill Walton, another example. Kevin McHale, his feet were completely messed up by the time he was done. It happens. And so there should be some real concern on the part of the Sixers. Again, at the time we're taping this, we don't have the official word on Embiid. There's no word whether or not, I mean, he might actually play in game five for all we know, and he might just be okay. But anytime Embiid gets hurt, because he does have that history, you got to be a little bit worried if you're the Sixers. I mean, one thing about Embiid, even if he does get hurt, he seems to battle through it, but he very rarely misses one game and then comes back. It's always a couple games for him. And your greatest ability as a pro athlete is availability. Embiid is an MVP candidate, so that means he's capable of carrying this bunch as a classic big man. But you worry for the future because we don't know the full extent of this. Doc Rivers even said that we need to praise Ben Simmons for all the little things that Simmons does and not criticize him for scoring 35 points a night. Well, if Embiid is hurt, guess what you need Ben Simmons to do? You need him to score 35 points. You need that in the NBA. You need that guy who's a good bet to give you 30. On the road in some cases in the playoffs. That's Embiid for the Sixers right now. It is. So if he's out, there could be issues again in Philly. Simmons is even getting hack-a-shacked. He was getting hack-a-shacked last night in Washington. And it's warranted. He's 5 for 20 from the line in this series. 5 for 20. 5 for 20. And he looked like a guy that didn't want to shoot free throws last night. He didn't. You could see it on his face. I'm a bit sour about this because I picked the Sixers to come out of the East at the beginning of the year before the Nets traded for Harden, of course. And it just appears like we could be heading towards the same movie ending if Embiid can't stay healthy here. Speaking of injuries that have kind of reared their ugly head in the playoffs this year, I mean, it happens every year in every league. And really, the winner of the championship just comes down to how you can manage the war of attrition through four rounds of the playoffs. But injuries have been an issue in the NBA the last little bit. Joel Embiid might be hurt here. Anthony Davis, no, he's not going to play in tonight's Game 5 against the Suns. Maybe he goes Game 6, maybe he doesn't. But I do want to get into the Lakers a little bit here because the defending champs could be on the ropes. I mean, by the time this airs, we'll know what LeBron James has done in a very hostile road environment. Can we count out LeBron James this time? Do we like the Suns going into round two? There's a very legitimate reason why the Suns could advance to round two. Let's look at this big picture here. Let's say the Suns win two of the next three. They get to the second round. It's going to be because Chris Paul appears to be back. I mean, you saw it on Sunday. He's still not going to shoot threes, and the Lakers are defending him that way. The reason he's not shooting threes is he obviously can't get his right arm to that angle to release the ball from 25, 28 feet out. But what Chris Paul can still do is he can still get into the paint, he can still hunt a mismatch, and he can still hit those little 15-foot fadeaways that just kill you at the end of games. He did that on Sunday, hit a couple of them in the second half, and then he made a great defensive play on Marc Gasol as well when the Lakers were making a push. I mean, look, the Lakers have a chance to win this series if they play defense, if they're locked in, if they're engaged at that end of the floor, and if they make shots, because they have not done that the entire series, and yet going into Game 5 tonight, we're tied at 2, and they very easily could be up 3-1 if they didn't take a nap in the third quarter of Game 4 on Sunday. So both these teams have a chance to advance, but the reason I think Phoenix is going to is because the emotional engine is back in the room for the Suns. There obviously wasn't much that Chris Paul is going to be able to do if he's sitting on the bench. I applaud him for being out there and trying to support his teammates as best he can. But there was that moment on Sunday where he hit one of those little 15-foot fallaways in the lane where he hunts a mismatch, and then he turned to the celebrities on the sideline and said, "Yeah, I'm back. I'm back." That's a great sign for the Phoenix Suns. That's a reason they're the 2 seed. I mean, Devin Booker's had a great year, but Chris Paul's had an excellent year too. That's why Chris Paul's been in the MVP conversation for at least the last month and a bit. And we've had to reevaluate the MVP conversation because of that, I know, but that's the reason he's been there. And if the Suns have that version of Chris Paul, or at least 81% of Chris Paul, there's a very good chance they could win this series. Because the Anthony Davis injury for the Lakers, I mean, we know he's not going to play Game 5 tonight. Let's say maybe he goes Game 6, but how much of Anthony Davis could you expect going into Game 6? Are we going to get Anthony Davis at 100%? Or are we going to get Anthony Davis at 45%, which, to be honest with you, as I had mentioned earlier, that's pretty much what he was in Game 4 on Sunday. He was very tentative. He was not as aggressive as he had been in Games 2 and 3. He kind of tweaked his knee a little bit in Game 3, and then he was compensating in Game 4, and now he goes out and gets hurt. That's what happens. I mentioned it. Paul George kind of dealt with that at various points this season with the Clippers as well. Had that toe injury, and that kind of affects everything else. That's what Davis is going through right now. You know, and that's kind of been the year for the Lakers with the injury luck that they've had. LeBron James missed a ton of games with that high ankle sprain. He may not even be 100%. In fact, LeBron James' scoring average in this series going into tonight's Game 5 is the lowest it's ever been since the 2011 Finals against the Mavericks, and that was a series where he really appled up. He just disappeared, and that's the reason that he lost that 2011 Finals series. That was his first year in Miami. It was a long time ago. So we have yet to see a classic LeBron James game in this series. Will we get one? I don't know. He's 36 years old. He's playing in a hostile environment tonight without his second in command. We've seen him do it before. We've seen him have those nights where he plays 45, 47 minutes. But he's also 4 or 5 years older now than he was the second time around in Cleveland. He's 7 years older than what we saw in Miami. We can't count him out. Think back to the NFL season when Tom Brady forgot what down it was in Chicago, holding up those four fingers. We all had a field day. Oh, Tom's washed. He's done. You can't count him out, though. And guess who was standing there on the podium at the end? LeBron James has earned that level of respect from us that he's one of those guys where we have to see him fall before we can say, yeah, he fell. He failed. We can't count him out. There is a possibility the Lakers win this series. It's probably going to have to be in seven, which is maybe something they wouldn't have preferred. But it'll probably have to go seven. And the reason it would is because Chris Paul is now back. After the worst contusion in recorded human history where he could barely lift his arm, he can at least lift it enough to be effective on the floor for the Suns. And you heard Chris Paul's interview after Game 4 on Sunday. It was a little bit emotional. Monty Williams wanted to hold him out. And Chris Paul told Rachel Nichols, look, I said to Monty, hell no, put me in the game. Put me in the game. And he was great. And you know what? Maybe if he doesn't play in Game 4, maybe the Lakers win that game. Maybe they're up 3-1 going into this Game 5 and there isn't the same level of pressure. Maybe the Lakers have a little more leeway with Anthony Davis out. But with Anthony Davis out, again, he's not playing Game 5. Maybe he doesn't play Game 6. Maybe he's out for a couple of weeks. What do you do? Even if the Lakers advance here in this series, you probably start Marc Gasol for one. And the reason you do that is spacing offensively. Look, the Lakers have made it clear they really like Andre Drummond. And obviously, with the amount of playing time they've given him, they want him around for the long term. I don't know that this is necessarily the right move for them. Like, he's okay defensively. And Frank Vogel has made it pretty clear in his rotations, if you can't play defense, you will not play for me. Drummond's been okay. He does have an ability to rebound the basketball, but he gums things up in the paint for the Lakers, kills their spacing. And if you've got a lineup that you have to go a couple weeks here, maybe without Anthony Davis, even if they do advance, even if they do win this round, and it's just LeBron James, and even he's not quite at 100%, the way you're going to win is spacing and high IQ guys. And when I think spacing and high IQ, I think Marc Gasol. I don't think Andre Drummond at all. And that's not Andre Drummond's fault. He's a nice guy. He's a decent player, but he doesn't fit in to that mindset, because you want to have cutters. You want to have shooters around LeBron James. That's the way it's got to be. Now, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope not playing is a bit of a problem too, because he is their best spot-up shooter. He is also their best wing defender as well. So ideally, you'd want a lineup where you have LeBron James, you got KCP, Alex Caruso out there maybe, Kyle Kuzma, and Marc Gasol. It's a bit crazy, but you got to go really small. You got to go really small, and you have to stagger the minutes between LeBron and Dennis Schroeder as well. And that's another thing with Dennis Schroeder. He's in a contract year right now. This would be a hell of a time for a nice contract run. We saw playoff Rondo in the bubble last year. It'd be nice to see playoff Schroeder. We don't really know what playoff Schroeder is, but you know what I'm getting at. This is why the Lakers got him. This is why they brought him in, to be that kind of secondary ball handler, creator. They could sure use him. Certainly in Game 5 tonight. Game 4, he shot 3 of 13 from the floor. They lost the game. Funny how that works. But the Lakers do have a lot of questions. How long is Davis going to be out? And is it worth trying to repeat and running Davis out there when he's less than 100% when you consider that they've already signed him to the big extension? And LeBron James has his contract extension, but he's 36 years old. Anthony Davis is going to be the guy for the Lakers for years to come. And with big guys, when they start getting these little injuries, every time it happens, kind of like Embiid, what we were just talking about, every time it happens, you have to worry. You have to worry for the future. That's always a concern. So what the Lakers are dealing with right now, do we sit Anthony Davis or do we hurry him out there at 78%? They still probably hurry him out there because any Anthony Davis is better than no Anthony Davis. But you got to wonder. You got to wonder about the long-term viability of your star. You have to protect your stars. And all the load management in the world is not going to stop injuries from occurring at the wrong time. That's what the Lakers are dealing with right now. They got some great injury luck in the bubble last year on either side, obviously, with Jimmy Butler going down in the finals and Bam Adebayo got hurt and Goran Dragic got hurt, and there were injuries in the other series as well. The Lakers had great luck in the bubble last year. Now they're on the other side of that, and you wonder which Los Angeles team is going to go further in this postseason. Which, of course, brings us to Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, and the Los Angeles Clippers. What a difference a few days makes, huh? What a difference. It wasn't that long ago that the Clippers were down 2-0 in this series to the Dallas Mavericks. Everybody was freaking out. We were all making our jokes, myself included. Ty Lue and Paul George said not to freak out after Game 2, and you know what? We should have believed them. The Clippers went small in this series, going to Dallas, and it's worked. And we have to give Paul George some credit over the last couple games here. And Kawhi has been great. 2019 Finals MVP, great. And Luka Doncic is banged up. And if he can't be effective, this thing is capital D-U-N done. It's amazing where we are in this series compared to not even a week ago. The Clippers looked lost defensively in the first two games at home. The Mavericks were shooting at an historic clip, but still, the Clippers, their rotations were lost. This is one of the best defensive teams in the NBA. They have all the pieces to guard everything you need to guard in the modern NBA, and they look completely lost in the first two games at home. And it's not like Game 2 was a blowout either. The Clippers do deserve a ton of credit for not folding in Game 3 when they were down 30-11 in the first quarter, and everyone was saying the Clippers should blow it up. Kawhi wasn't going to come back. Maybe they try to move Paul George. Steve Ballmer's new arena project in Inglewood was going to lose support publicly because the Clippers were still the stepchild in the city, and now everything has changed for the two LA teams. Part of that is Kawhi Leonard. Part of it is luck. Dallas's shooting percentages went way down in games 3 and 4 than compared to where they were in games 1 and 2. There were literal vibes of 2011 when that 2011 Mavericks team that eventually won the championship sent Phil Jackson into retirement. Remember that? Swept the Lakers. You had Peja Stojakovic, Jason Terry, Dirk Nowitzki was at his apex, and they just kept hitting threes. And hitting threes and hitting threes. And there were so many vibes on Friday night in Game 3 watching the first few minutes of that. It was 30-11. First quarter, Game 3, up 2-0 in that series. It was a full crowd because it was Texas. They don't care about protocols or anything down there. It was rocking. You thought the Mavericks were on their way. You thought they were going to sweep this series. And then we were headed for another summer of LA Clipper discourse. What they were going to do. Was Kawhi going to opt out? Would Paul George be moved? How desperate would they get? Steve Ballmer's made all the changes that he can. What more can he do? And now, series is tied and Luka Doncic is banged up. Clippers are probably going to win this thing. I said Clippers in 6 at the beginning, but I didn't think it would go down this way. I really didn't. And Kawhi gets a lot of credit for that. He has been an MVP candidate, at least through the first 4 games. Paul George has been great, too. I mean, we like to joke on Paul George all the time. He's been really good, particularly in Game 3, when the Clippers finally got it settled down defensively, and Paul George and Kawhi just eviscerated whoever was in front of them. Didn't matter. Didn't matter who. That's what you need in the playoffs. You need guys like that. You need moments like that. You need games like that to galvanize you. And, you know, if you're a Clipper fan, after those first two games on home court at Staples, in front of all those cardboard cutouts, things look pretty rough. They look pretty rough, and things turned around awfully fast. Part of the reason is, like I said, the Clippers went small defensively. Ty Lue gets Zubac out of there, and now you're running a lineup that consists of Kawhi and Paul George, and Serge Ibaka isn't really available, so you got to put Marcus Morris out there. You got to get a little creative, and that's what Ty Lue's managed to do. Don't forget, this is a guy with a ring. This is a guy with a championship. They didn't go far down the bench when Doc Rivers left for a reason. You know, and again, Ty Lue and Paul George after Game 2, they just said, don't panic. And when they did, everybody laughed because we thought, same old Clippers. Same old Clippers. And now, yeah, they're not that far away. Not that far away. And in fact, and again, things could change in a handful of days here because that's what happens in the NBA playoffs. Right now, the Clippers look to be the team in LA that seems more likely to advance to round two, when just a few days ago, it was completely reversed. Everything was rosy with the Lakers. LeBron James was embarrassing Jay Crowder on national television. The Clippers looked listless after the first couple games, and they were getting ran on early on in game three, and then things just turned. And now Doncic is banged up. He's visibly frustrated. And now the Mavericks are staring at another offseason where, you know, what are they going to do potentially here if they lose this series especially? What are we going to do to maximize our window with Luka Doncic? Because it's clear that Kristaps Porzingis is not going to be that guy. Not going to be that guy. He's not a factor offensively, especially when you're trying to post up Porzingis even, and all that really happens is he gets pushed out of the post and he's got to force some 15-foot jump shot. If you're the Clippers, you're loving that. That's exactly what you want. Doncic is banged up, and now Porzingis can't take over. This series is done. The Mavericks might as well be making, you know, vacation plans for next week if Luka's hurt, because Luka was fantastic in the first two games. But if he's banged up, well, that changes it. And that makes things interesting on that other side of, you know, the Western Conference bracket, because you know that Utah is going to be there. Jazz winning last night. They're up 3-1 in that series. You figure that Utah is going to be there now that Donovan Mitchell is back. He's been effective. Mike Conley had his moments last night. Rudy Gobert has picked his spots. That should be a very intriguing second-round matchup as we start to look ahead here, because the Jazz will kill you by committee. They'll just shoot threes to death, and they'll just try to outscore you. But, you know, you roll out a defense that's equipped with guys who can defend on the perimeter, who are long and can make things difficult for you. The Clippers might be a rough matchup for Utah. Provided everything, you know, plays out the way I'm predicting here, the Clippers might be a tough matchup for the number one seed in the West. And suddenly we could see a scenario where it's Utah trying to exercise demons, and maybe the Clippers issues and the Clipper curse doesn't come into the forefront because they have Kawhi Leonard. We have Kawhi Leonard, and you don't. Donovan Mitchell's a nice player. Mike Conley's a nice player. Rudy Gobert is a nice player. Bogdanovich, nice player. Jordan Clarkson's had a great year. But it may come down to we have Kawhi Leonard, and you don't. And as much as we talk about Nets and Bucks potentially being exciting in round two, if there is any team in the East that can maybe give the Nets a series, it's probably Milwaukee. As much as we talk about that, well, we can't sleep on the potential of a Utah Clippers second-round series. That would be a war. Would you look at that? I'm out of time. My thanks again to Steve DeWald, SB Nation, Blazers Edge. Enjoy the next few days of games. It should be wild, and we'll get a better sense of what we're looking at come round two. This is Basketball Central. I'm Marcus Fitzgerald. You've got it on the home of the Vancouver Canucks. This is Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver.